Blog Talk Radio.
Never had controlling fear. living. Never alive, kicking it loud, dropping a bomb, brain game, intellectual being. I move as a team, never move alone. Well, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Come on! Yo, look at you now. You ain't want to lose this to me. Now look at you.
What up, what up, what up? Tuesday, May 28th, 2019, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. This is the Ant Canary Experience. I'm your host, Ant Canary, coming to you live from the capital city of North Kakilaki, Raleigh, Southside. We are going to do a part two of last week's show, which is entitled Fear of a Black and Brown Planet. Doing a part two because last week I was about to get to the show, had a call from a young man named David from Minnesota, and we pretty much talked about different things for, what, about an hour and 20 minutes, I believe. And that was a good thing because, number one, this is a talk show, so you got to have stuff to talk about, and we talked. And to be honest with you, I thought the call was going to go sideways toward the beginning, but it didn't. And I think most of the issues that we have as a country and as a world on a whole is that people can have different opinions, different ways of looking at things, and we can talk to each other about those, and we don't always have to agree, but we need to talk and listen to each other. And he had some ideas that I didn't particularly agree with, and I'm sure I had some ideas that he didn't agree with, but we were able to talk about it. And matter of fact, before he left, he had brought up a video from PBS that I checked out. I think it was the Trump's trade war, and I looked at it this weekend while I was at work, and it was pretty interesting. So pretty much everything, as far as, you know, and this is not about his trade war, because a lot of that stuff he was talking about, you know, could have been avoided if Trump was the kind of person, and I go back to the stuff that he did. He doesn't want to listen to anybody. He's one of those people that think he knows everything, but he don't know nothing. And that's a classic example. This trade stuff that we're going through now, if he would learn how to talk to people, we wouldn't be going through it. Prices are getting ready to go up, whether you know that or not. They may not be hitting right away, but they're going to go up because of the stuff that he's doing. Now a lot of the stuff that and this isn't about what we're talking about tonight, but I'll bring this up and then we'll go ahead and get started. But a lot of the stuff that that Trump and his fans are talking about, as far as China goes, China takes what they call intellectual property. I think that's the correct term for it. But there's nothing going to be done with it. What they do is they take that. They take the ideas, I'm guessing the ideas, the schematics and stuff like that from other products, and they take the ideas and they make counterfeit products with them. And that problem, that issue could have been taken care of a long time ago, but it wasn't due to the fact of money. When the companies had said something about this years ago, nothing was done because China is one of America's biggest trading partners, and they didn't want to mess that up, so nothing was done about it. So this is the excuse that Trump's using now, that this is what China's doing, so he's trying to get back at them for doing that. Well, nothing's going to get done. Only thing's going to get done, prices are going to jack up on a lot of the stuff that we use, and China's not paying the tariffs. We are. That's what they won't tell you. These are taxes. And the taxes are we're going to end up paying for them because they're going to the company's going to put the cost on the product, and then we end up paying for the stuff at the store. there's not a whole lot of stuff being made in America. And a lot of that's got to do with greed and all kinds of stuff. So we're not making a whole lot of stuff. So in the end, the citizens are getting bit in the butt for it. But he won't talk about that. But like I said, we're not going to talk about that tonight. We'll talk about that some other time. But I did want to say that if David is listening tonight, thank you for the call. I wrote down his name and his number because whenever the calls come in, I like to see who's calling in. And I didn't put him on the ban list. I don't ban anybody. So tonight what I'm going to do, if you do, I'll give out the number. And if you do decide to call, if you can, you can either call in and listen to the show on your phone and wait until I finish with what I'm going to present tonight, or just call in later. And if there's time at the end of the program, I'll take calls. But I do want to get this information out, and I wasn't able to do it, which is cool. I'll get it out tonight. I've got 5 clips. I've got a little bit of reading to do, not a whole lot of reading, but I want to put this stuff out there to you. And the number to call in is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. So if you don't want to call in, just listen, that's cool. I've done a whole bunch of shows like that where I do all the talking and all, you just sit back and listen. That's cool too. Because tonight what I want to talk about is very important. Like the title of the show goes, Fear of a Black and Brown Planet. Now, what that means is Trump and his cronies, or his minions, or his asshole followers, or whatever you want to call them, there have been studies done that, and I think some of the stuff I may have mentioned last week, but I'll mention it again tonight, that in about 20-some years, 20, 25 years, if climate change hadn't killed us by then, America, for the first time, is going to go from a white majority to a white minority. And they're going crazy about that, especially the white supremacists. They're losing their minds about that. So what they came up with, I'm not sure how long ago they came up with these plans, but so what they're doing is they're using abortion, immigration, and the wall. All three of these are in a plan together to try to stop the coming of their minority from a majority. And the abortion laws are not, and I'll repeat this, they are not put into place to care for the unborn babies. In a way they are, but when they come out and say that that's what they're putting them in effect for, they're lying, and they know they're lying. They're putting them in effect because they don't want white women having abortions. And that's the bottom line. They don't want white women having abortions. And as a matter of fact, most of the abortions in this country are done by white women, but they won't tell you that. And that plays into the immigration laws that he's trying to pass that I don't think got good marks because they're kind of stupid. What this orange shit given has proposed is that people coming into this country take a test, pay a fee, and more likely they've got to be college graduates. That's not how his wife came into this country. Two out of his three wives were born in other countries. The wife that he has now is only here because she overstayed her visa. She didn't cross a border to get over here. She came by plane and overstayed her visa. And then they bought in her family, and then right after they bought her family in, then all of a sudden he wants to cut off the provision where you can, you know, if you come over here, you can bring your family over here too. All of a sudden that got cut. I wonder why. And then what he proposed to do, and I think I read this list off last week, countries on the banned list coming over here: Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, North Korea, or North Korea is because of, you know, and Venezuela. So most of these countries that he doesn't want to come over here are just, and I guess you could say Mexico too, and Haiti, are full of black and brown people. So they're trying to, they're trying to keep the numbers down of black and brown people coming into this country, and then trying to get the numbers up for white women having babies. And the wall comes into place because they're trying to wall off an entire country from coming over. And they think, I mean, a wall is, you know, a wall is not going to stop anybody. You can go under a wall, you can go around a wall, you can go over a wall, you can go through the wall. Wall is not going to stop anybody. They may think it will, but it won't. If they want to get over here bad enough, they'll find a way to get over here. And then, you know, people, you know, you said Mexico, you know, coming over, they're rapists and drug dealers and blah, blah, blah. We already had that kind of stuff over here. You know, a lot of the drugs coming to this country coming in are on boats, and we don't own any of the boats. Sometimes they may find a few in cars and trucks and all that kind of stuff. But most of these drugs coming in by big boats at harbors, not over a wall, not under a wall. So they're using all of these excuses to keep black and brown people out of the country. That's just the bottom line. And the clips I play tonight will give you more information about that. Let me see what this is. Oh. And there were studies done that there was a 32, right here. Okay, let me get this one. The birth rate in this country has fallen to a 32-year low. 32 years ago from now was 86. That's when I graduated high school. So, a lot of white women are not having babies like they used to. And they think that it could be due to, where's that thing at? That could be, I just saw it. That, a lot of women are just not having babies anymore, and then the ones that, you know, don't want the kid or can't, you know, they're doing what, you know, whatever they're doing. So for 32 years, for a 32-year low, they're not having babies like they used to. And also, a lot of white people are getting older and they're dying, so the numbers are not catching up with. Are catching up with each other. Also, some women are waiting until they get a little bit older to have kids. Used to be back in the day, you know, early 20s, you know. Now they're having kids late 30s and early 40s. A lot of women are waiting until they get on their feet before they have babies because babies are expensive. And I know I've got two of them. They are very expensive. And there are small declines in Hispanics, Blacks, and Asians, but not as much as white women. And there was a 2%, there was 2% fewer births. Let's see, what is this? This is, this was written last year. So last year, there were 2% fewer births than 2017. Births to teenagers reached a record low. The number of births to mothers ages 15 through 19 was 179,607, down 8%. So they're not having kids like they used to have. So the numbers are going down. And so somebody figured out in the Republican Party that in order to get these numbers up, they would just outlaw abortion. And if you notice, a lot of the states that are doing that are in the South. And they're using excuses that they're not telling everybody. You know, what they do is, here in the South, and I'll tell you straight up, here in the South, they use religion as a weapon. And Republicans use religion as a weapon. They use fear, and they use religion. So a lot of them went on TV when they're blabbing about these laws. First thing out of their mouth was, you know, we want to protect the children. No, you don't. And what's also jacked up about this is that, you know, these laws will fine the mother and the doctor that does the abortion, but they say nothing about the men that are getting these women pregnant. So in a lot of these southern states, if you go get a woman pregnant, if you rape her, if it's incest or anything like that, nothing happens to you. So the mother and the doctor can get more time in jail than the actual rapist that raped the mother and then make the mother have the baby after she's been raped. Now that makes no sense at all. So let's think about this logically for just one second. Just a second. So if you're a guy, you meet a woman at a party, and your guy is up to no good anyway, and you rape this woman, and you get her pregnant, if she decides to go to have an abortion, if she goes out of state or whatever the case may be, and it's found out, she can go to jail for X amount of years. I think one state says about 99 years or some mess like that. The doctor can go to jail for years. But nobody said anything about the rapist. You know, if they give him any time, I guess he'll get, 5 or 10 years or whatever, and he gets out. But what about the mother and the doctor? Who's going to raise the kid? Is the rapist going to raise the kid whenever he gets out of jail? I doubt it. So who's going to raise the kid? If the mother's in jail, who's going to raise the kid? The grandparents? And I'm just going to say right now, my thing is, I'm real simple on this. Women should have the right to do with their bodies what they want to do, period. Now, people sit up here and try to throw morality and religion. Yeah, well, do whatever. Do whatever. Because if men were having the babies, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. So people want to throw that religion in. Just like I said, people use religion as a weapon. So, you know, if you want to, you know, what about the babies? Well, okay, well, I don't know. That's none of my business. It's funny how this country likes to always talk about freedom and all this other kind of crap, but it's just freedom for certain. It's freedom for certain people. It's not freedom for everybody. It's freedom to a certain extent, but it doesn't cover everybody. So you can be free to do what you want to do up until you get close to the line, and then you can't do that because I don't like that. You know, people always use that excuse. Well, I don't think. Well, you can think what you want to think, but you're not in these women's situations. And nobody wants to have an abortion. But if you don't know what these women are going through, you don't know the circumstances, then you have no business telling other people what to do, especially men. Men have no business telling women what to do unless that woman is a part of that man's life. That's the bottom line. Because all of this is just about, it's about control. People want to think they can tell other people what to do. No, you can't. You know, it's kind of like when Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee and all these meatheads were getting all bent out of shape about it. And see, all that was about, and I tell people, and they, well, I was pissing people off. I don't give a shit. And I get in certain moods, I really don't give a damn. We don't need people's permission to protest. And you're not going to sit there and tell a grown man that he can't protest peacefully. We don't have to ask permission to do things. See, that stuff goes way back during the slave days. But we're not slaves anymore, so you can't tell us what to do. And this is all about control. This basically is all about control. They want to control these women, and having all these kids, they don't want to mess with birth control, because they want to get back to the time where women were having 10, 11, 12, 13 babies. That was only because, you know, they had to work out and work on the farms and all. But see, people don't do that anymore. People don't have 10 and 12 kids no more. We can't afford them. They cost too much. So they came up with these ideas of passing all these laws to control women into doing their bidding. You know, and then at the same time, well, you know, we're protecting the children. Okay, if you want to protect the children, how about protect the children that are already here? You know, they'll protect the womb. But once that baby is born, hey, kid, how you doing? You're on your own. Got to learn how to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, but they're so busy cutting programs for the kids and the family. But up until you, when you're in the womb, boy, they'll protect you. They'll stand guard if they have to. And as soon as you pop up, hey, you're on your own. Well, some of them, they'll protect them until they get of age to join the military, so they can go fight these wars that seem like every Republican that gets in office wants to have for some reason. Because our military budget is like more than like what everybody else. And that brings me to this too. Yesterday was Memorial Day. You know, we wouldn't have any more veterans if we stopped having wars with everybody. I did a program years ago on every single war that this country has ever had since the beginning. And out of all those years, from the very beginning of this country until now, we've only had peace for about 21 years. My oldest daughter, the only daughter I have, is 23. So to put that in perspective, we've only had peace about the entire time she's been on this planet. And this country is old. This country is hundreds of years old. But we have had fights with about every country in the world. And now the orange shit giving wants to start a fight with Iran. He won't start one with North Korea because he's trying to be like little Kim so bad it is killing him. Not going to start a fight with Russia because that's Russia's pulling the strings in the background. But he wants to start a fight with, guess what? A Muslim country. The brown people. Because he doesn't like Muslims. But let there be another mass killing in this country. Most of them are done by Christian white males to begin with. Won't say nothing about them. But if there's one done by somebody black or brown, that's all they talk about. But they haven't been one in a while, so they ain't got nothing to talk about. But he wants to go to war against a Muslim country because He's got nothing better to do. Now, was that nuclear, that treaty or whatever you want to call it, was that perfect? No, it wasn't perfect. Didn't have to be perfect. But it was working. So he decided that he wants to break it because he's got nothing better to do. And that's exactly what he's trying to do. And you got the general telling him, no, mind your business. Stay out of it. We don't need to be going to war. But he probably won't listen. Because, you know, the military contractors are paying a lot of these clowns. That's why they've been in office for so long, because they get money up under the table and they don't want to lose that. They're used to a certain lifestyle. So these clowns don't care nothing about black or brown people. Calling, you know, a lot of these countries shithole countries. Not Norway, not Sweden, not Switzerland. But the black and brown country, call them shithole countries. And then pretend that he didn't say it when he said it. Got him on tape. So let me play this first clip. I think this one is on... Yeah, this one's on immigration. This is a short one. Okay, yeah, let's play this. This is a short clip on his asinine plan on immigration.
President Trump today trying to jumpstart the process of overhauling America's legal immigration system. No president has been able to do that for more than three decades. Mr. Trump wants a point system for would-be immigrants. Those with skills or higher education would score higher in that point system. Democrats say it doesn't add up. Here's Paula Reed.
We are proposing an immigration plan that puts the jobs, wages, and safety of American workers first.
The proposal emphasizes new security measures at the border and a shift to a merit-based selection process for legal immigrants.
If you want to become an American citizen, it will be clear exactly what standard we ask you to achieve. It will be made crystal clear.
The president's plan would favor younger applicants with specific skills or higher education who can speak English and pass a civics exam. The current system admits mostly people with relatives already in the U.S.
A big proportion of those immigrants must come in through merit and skill.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi objected to how the plan defines merit.
It is really a condescending word. Are they saying family is without merit? Are they saying most of the people who have ever come to the United States in the history of our country are without merit because they don't have an engineering degree?
The plan does not address the pressing challenge of the 11 million people living in the U.S. illegally, or the so-called Dreamers, people who were brought to the country illegally by their parents. Democrats won't support a plan that does not address those issues.
This sham proposal is dead on arrival. It is a mockery of what America means. Neither Donald Trump's grandfather nor my father would be able to come to America under this proposal.
Some Republicans say they're disappointed this plan would not reduce legal immigration and would continue to issue about a million visas a year. In response to all this blowback from Capitol Hill, a senior administration official says this is just an opening offer. John?
Paula Reed at the White House.
Never forget, Trump's grandfather was a pimp and a drug dealer. Don't forget that way back in the day when people were coming over here, a lot of them didn't have college degrees. A lot of them came here just to get away from where they were at to come over here. They came over here on boats. Went through New York, went through the process of becoming, you know, citizens. And I did read somewhere that, he was talking about you know, college degrees. A lot of people from Africa have college degrees. They're black and brown. They can probably pass a civics test. He probably couldn't pass it, but they can probably pass it. They go through all the stuff that, you know, they're trying to put up, and they pass. Is he going to let them in? Or come up with something else? Come up with an immigration tax or something like that. Kind of like what they used to do back then when black people wanted to go vote. They had to take a test in order to vote. If they didn't pass the test, they couldn't vote. Then they tried to pass a tax. If they didn't have the money to pay the tax, they couldn't vote. This is exactly what this sounds like. So they're not coming out and saying that they're going to not let black and brown people in. They're kind of, you know, weaseling around it and hiding behind words, merit base. It's not gonna go through. It's not gonna make it. You see how they're ducking and dodging, trying to get around this stuff when they know the deal. They know exactly what they're doing. This next clip talks about the boon as far as Hispanic people go. Because most, as far as I understand, most Hispanics are Catholic. Catholics don't use birth control. That's why a lot of Catholic people have a lot of kids, because they keep going and going and going, and they keep having these babies. So one hand, they use religion to try to prop this up, you know, pretending that they, you know, care about the babies. Abortion is murder, blah, blah, blah. But then they have this other thing on the other hand, is that Hispanics are Catholic, which is a religion, and their religion believes in no birth control, so they keep having all these damn kids, and they keep having all these damn kids, and then the numbers go up. So they're caught in between. So that's why I said earlier in the show, the numbers are going to go up for everybody else, and the numbers are going to go down for white folks. And they can't handle it. So we're going to play this clip, and it talks about the Hispanic boom. Where is that? Okay, the Hispanic boom in this country. And white folk are trying to do something about it, but going to get to the point where they can't do anything about it. So let's listen to this, and I'll be back.
And finally tonight, to another aspect of a changing America, Ray Suarez looks at the newest census data.
Racial and ethnic minorities accounted for 90% of the growth in the U.S. population over the past decade, and Hispanics were by far the largest part of that increase. That's one of the headlines from the new census data on race and migration. Latinos made up more than half of the population growth, most rapidly in the South. Today, one of every six Americans, about 50 million people, is Hispanic. The data also found more than 50% of children in at least 10 states are minorities. Many of the cities with the largest African-American populations, including Chicago and Detroit, saw declines as residents moved to the suburbs and to the South. All of the 10 largest metropolitan areas grew over the past decade, with growth concentrated outside the urban centers. We get perspective now with three people who watch all this closely. William Fry is a demographer with the Brookings Institution. Isabel Wilkerson is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. And Mark Lopez is associate director of the Pew Hispanic Center. Well, Bill Fry, let me start with you. The Hispanic number seems to be the headline that's catching everybody's attention. Why is it significant?
Well, it's significant because it's hit this 50 million benchmark. I think that sticks in people's mind. It also is significant because it accounted for more than half of the growth in the United States. But it's in addition significant if you juxtapose it against the very small growth of the white population, the white Anglo population, grew less than 2% this last decade. And so this is a way of looking at our country, which is kind of aging with respect to our old established white population, and this new growth of a more youthful Latino population. I think much more so than in the last decade when the census numbers came out, we're seeing that a lot of these communities would have lost more people, would not have gained as much, were it not for this growing younger Latino population in all different parts of the country.
And Mark Lopez, it's no longer a story of just the border states and the coasts, is it?
No, it's not. It's actually a story of Hispanic population growth in all parts of the country, whether we're talking about states like California and Texas, or even states such as Georgia or Alabama or Tennessee. Particularly in the Southeast, we saw Hispanic populations in those areas double in states like Tennessee and Arkansas and North Carolina over the last decade.
Double from a very small base, though, compared to California, New York, and Florida, right?
Well, in the case of Georgia, it was a doubling from about 435,000 to over 850,000 in the last decade. But yes, in many cases for Alabama, for example, a relatively small base.
Isabel Wilkerson, the story that's playing out with the census seems to be the reverse of the one you told in your book. The grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the people who left the South are coming back. Why?
Yes, I think in some ways that this is a second wave, a continuation of that search for a place in the American mainstream. I think that the migration is going in multiple directions. One is to the suburbs within the cities, outside of the cities of the Great Migration itself. In other words, the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren are actually moving outside of the central cities that had drawn their grandparents and parents who had been a part of the Great Migration. And then others are returning to the ancestral homeland of the South. And they are also moving to the suburbs of these major cities such as Atlanta, Houston, and Charlotte.
Well, what does this mean for the South of 2011, of today, but also of 2020 and 2030? For much of the last 100 years, the South was a place that minorities fled. It was the most uniformly native-born of all our regions of the country. It's a new place now?
Well, it's my contention that the dispersal, the outpouring of people from the South, in fact, put pressure on the South and on the North and helped to change the South and made it a more welcoming place, which has occurred since the Civil Rights era. And in many respects has made it a more welcoming place for not just African Americans to return to their ancestral homeland, but also for other groups, for Latinos and for even Northern whites who find it a place that is more to their liking, more open and more welcoming. And I think that this is all a positive thing in a way because it's a dispersal of people who had been marginalized and concentrated in one area. And so now you have people all over the country who had been marginalized before, concentrated in one area, now mainstreaming into the rest of the country.
Mark Lopez, with the numbers showing that blacks are declining in places like New York and Chicago and Detroit, are Latinos taking their place in some of those cities?
In some cases, yes, and we've seen certainly a large amount of Latino population growth in many cities across the country. And also, we've certainly seen that in many cases where Latinos had a large presence, their presence has increased in places such as Los Angeles, for example, where almost half of the population in the city of Los Angeles is of Hispanic background. But we've seen this growth in the Hispanic population in all parts of the country. So it's a phenomenon that's not just along the South, but is also in many other metropolitan areas around the country.
Bill Fry, is the America of the future taking shape in these numbers? One piece of data that just sort of stuck out at me. The young population in this country grew by 3%, and minority youth grew by 22%.
That's right, and there's actually an absolute decline in the young white population in the United States and a small absolute decline in the African-American young population in the United States. So it's the new minorities that are fueling all of this growth among the young people. 46 states lost children, white children under age 18. There was an absolute decline in 46 states, and only about half the states gained children. And the reason they did is because they were getting more Hispanic kids. So our future, really, our future labor force in the next 10 years and our future electorate and all of this is really not with this sort of aging white population anymore. It's not only because they're having fewer children. It's just they have an age structure where there are fewer women in the childbearing years, and it's this more youthful Hispanic population which is taking over. And what I think it means is we need to pay a lot of attention to the diversity of our young people in our schools and in all our other government services that we offer. It's a window on the future, but it's something we need to act on now.
So, Isabel Wilkerson, I guess a lot of states that have no experience hiring ESL teachers are going to get some very soon, huh?
That's what I mean by this mainstreaming. It is an opportunity for the entire country to experience the diversity that only some parts of the country have had the opportunity to experience. And I think that it gives us all a chance to be able to see how the country has truly grown. We have come a long, long way from the earlier parts of the 20th century when there were certain parts of the country that were not very welcoming to diverse groups of people. I also see this as an opportunity for people who are in the suburbs to see the suburbs changing. This is in some ways the suburbanization of the African-American population, which is a new way of looking at what's happening in the cities. As these cities depopulate of their traditional African-American constituency, we're seeing that culture and that political power that they had been able to build up over the years since the Great Migration is now being dispersed, and that's something that we will be observing in the next few years as well, and decades.
There have been big consequences for the Great Lakes states in these new numbers. Michigan and Puerto Rico were the only places that lost in absolute terms, but there was near stagnation or sort of holding level over the last 10 years in a lot of Wisconsin counties, Illinois, Indiana, and so on.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And, you know, again, this is part of the country that, for a variety of reasons, economically just hasn't caught on to where the real growth was. But the demographic aspect of these countries is, again, these kind of aging, largely white populations, which don't have that fertility. And they're very dependent, going back to the Latino growth again. 18 states in this country, half of their growth in the last decade came from Latinos. And we're talking about states like Nebraska and Iowa and Kansas, not just Florida and Texas and California. So, I mean, I think that it's a benchmark decade in some ways, because especially in these slow-growing states, there are opportunities with these new immigration waves to help bolster up those populations, of course, with all the other strategies you need to take to create jobs in a new economy.
Mark, do we know yet, has the Census Bureau let on yet, how much of this Latino increase comes from natural growth of an already resident population versus legal and illegal immigration?
Well, the census of 2010 itself won't tell us about the nativity of individuals, but we've been following this from other census data sources at the Pew Hispanic Center over the last decade. And one of the things that's striking about this decade for Hispanics is that more population growth among Hispanics has come from native-born births as opposed to new immigration. Now, both sources are important for the growth in the Hispanic population over this last decade. But in the 1990s, more growth in the Hispanic population came from immigration rather than from native-born births. But looking forward, it looks like if trends continue, they will continue to see the native-born births play an important role and an increasingly important role in Hispanic population growth through the next few decades.
They don't count in the census itself whether a member of the household was born outside the United States?
That's correct.
Huh. Well, I guess all the waiting in the world for that piece of data won't make a difference. What about the cities, Bill Frey? They've had a tough road over the last. Only one big city outside the South and the West grew, and that was New York, but everywhere else a lot of decline.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the suburbanization phenomenon continues in lots of parts of the country. We're now seeing there's black flight, like the white flight that we've seen for many decades. And it's especially the case in the Midwest and the Northeast where the suburbanization and also moving to other regions of the country. Cities are still important, but lots of them are going to have to face a downsized population and with a very different mix. And a lot of these cities aren't going to be just black and white anymore for the reasons we've been talking about. Chicago is about a third white, a third black, and a third some combination of Hispanics and Asians, a very different image of a city than you would have thought 20 years ago.
Does that also have a cultural impact, Isabel? Chicago's black population in this census went down for the first time ever.
Yes, I think that one of the things that is quite startling when you think about the transfer the flow and inheritance, you might say, of one group to another. Of the African Americans who came in and into the cities during the 20th century, inherited the places that Eastern Europeans and Southern Europeans had been living in. And now they are leaving, and in some ways they're selling to people who had been the children and grandchildren of those who had been part of white flight, which is where you get the gentrification in some of the neighborhoods that makes for an interesting combination and transfer of culture. On top of that, you have the transfer of culture between the arrival of Latinos, who also are taking a different kind of role that African Americans might have had. And so I see a lot of movement. I mean, I think that we're all seeing a lot of movement and transfer of culture all the way around, which can only serve to expose all of us to more of what makes America what it is.
Isabel Wilkerson, Mark Lopez, and Bill Fry, thank you all.
Okay, now before I play this next clip, I'm going to read this article that came out a couple of weeks, about a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago, entitled Alabama's Abortion Bill is Great News for White Supremacists. It's not long. Many white supremacists subscribe to the bogus conspiracy theory that white people are going extinct due to immigration and failing birth rates among white women. To them, the strict abortion bill that passed the Alabama Senate on Tuesday, which aims to challenge a woman's constitutional right to choose to end a pregnancy, represents a huge victory in their effort to propagate the white race. And then a lot of these are quotes from some of these people that believe in that. One knucklehead wrote, "Praise God." Another one wrote, "Great news for the future children of America, I would say." Another one said, "It's only fair that we make it illegal for whites only." The paranoid fear that white people have, that white people are being replaced, was encapsulated perfectly by Representative Steve King. He's a stupid Republican butthole, and this clown is just—he's just dumb as I don't know what. One of America's most prominent white supremacists, when he tweeted in 2017, "Culture and demographics are our destiny. We can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies." King was echoing a view shared by white supremacists all around the world. The conspiracy theory of the Great Replacement holds that immigration by people of color into traditionally white majority countries and failing birth rates among white women are pushing white people, specifically in the West, toward extinction. White extinction isn't actually a thing, but it gives white supremacists like King a chance to play victim and claim oppression. To them, abortion and contraception are egregious, close enough, each a missed opportunity to turn the tide in their fanatical population war. As one, what they call a Gab, I guess it's some kind of website, as one Gab user put it on Wednesday, "There's nothing worse than a woman who voluntarily sterilizes herself, even if temporarily, while pretending she's fertile." These people are stupid. I don't know. By contrast, any measure that would drive white women to churn out more babies is considered a win among white supremacists. And now, one such measure is but a gubernatorial signature away from becoming law in Alabama. To white supremacists and many others, Alabama's bill represents the beginning of the end for Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that made abortion a woman's constitutional right. One clown wrote, "Holy shit, if we try to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court, then Roe versus Wade will be on the chopping block." Prominent white nationalists have long held that the answer to their stated problem, namely people of color within their country's borders, is to conceive more white babies. American white nationalist, A.S. Stewart, once reportedly called for a white baby challenge, which would have encouraged white people to have children to combat demographic decline. Then another nut, white nationalist Faith Goldie peddles almost exclusively in white replacement hysteria, calling on her fellow white people to fight back against white and Jewish invaders, in part by having white children. So all of this is just a piece of the puzzle, part of the plan for them to get these numbers up, because they know pretty soon when these numbers start going down, it's all about money and power, and they're losing it. This next clip, let's see, this is entitled "The Coming Racial Shift for the U.S. Play this, be right back.
We're going to continue to have declining whites in the younger years, or at least slow-growing whites, depending on what state that you're in. And all of the gains, or most of the gains, in your child populations are going to come from these new minority groups, especially Hispanics.
This is At Brookings, a weekly in-depth look at issues behind the news. This week, America's racial tipping point. Today's majority becomes tomorrow's minority.
The complexion of America is changing, literally. New statistics culled from the 2010 census show what demographers have long predicted. America's minorities will soon be the majority. In a tipping point for the nation's racial makeup, Hispanic, Black, and Asian toddlers now outnumber their white counterparts. It's an irreversible trend that presents both opportunities and challenges, says Senior Fellow William Fry.
The new data that just came out show that we've reached a very important tipping point for three-year-olds. There are 49.9% of three-year-olds in the United States who are white Anglo-Americans, which means there's now more than half of three-year-olds who are minorities of one sort or another, largely Hispanic, but also Asian-Americans, African-Americans. And it's very important because, of course, the three-year-olds will become four-year-olds and then continue to progress up, which means that our future of schools and eventually our labor force is going to have a lot to do with the new minority population, especially the new immigrant minorities, even if they're not immigrants themselves, they're second generation, third generation, but it's new for a lot of parts of the country.
Well, these findings that the population is shifting more towards a minority majority can't be unexpected.
There are quite a few places in the country where we've reached this tipping point for a while: Hawaii, New Mexico, California, Texas, more recently Nevada, Florida, Arizona. Have gotten to this stage, and these are places that either historically have had minority populations, Mississippi is one of them too, historically large Black populations, or places that have gotten a lot of new immigrants like Nevada and Arizona. And so it's the beginning of what might be happening, and certainly what will be happening in a huge number of other parts of the country. Not too far down the road, we're going to see Maryland, Louisiana, be part of this, and other parts of the South, other parts of the West, and eventually some of the Northeast and Midwest will be part of this trend.
Well, you say that immigration isn't the largest reason why we're seeing the shift in population.
If immigration would stop right now, we are eventually becoming more minority. Now, minority may have an odd sense to it if more people are of these groups than are Anglos, but we should just say groups other than Anglos, white Anglo-Americans, will eventually become a majority, but it'll be a long way out if there's no more immigration. Immigration certainly gets this going. But in a lot of states, California being one of them, the growth of the Hispanic population is more due to natural increase than it is to immigration, because there's now a momentum that has been built over several generations of immigrants and, you know, second, third generation of Hispanics that have been in California, New Mexico, other places are like that already.
What are some of the key challenges associated with this change in population?
We kind of know what this is going to look like in different states and different cities over the next 10 years. It's changing dramatically. And it means that we have to have our schools and other institutions be ready to deal with a multi-ethnic population, people speaking different languages, not just Spanish, but a whole range of languages in some of the urban school districts. And you know, it's difficult, it's expensive, it's challenging, but it's absolutely necessary for us to come to grips with this, because these are the people that are forming our labor force in the next 10 or 20 years as the older white and African American baby boomers start retiring out of the labor force. These are the folks that are going to be there, and we want to make sure that they have the best opportunity to get good jobs and to make us a prosperous country, as past immigrant waves have done in helping us get where we are today.
The numbers show that Hispanics, African American, and Asians have higher birth rates than Caucasians do. Is this one of the main reasons we're seeing this trend?
The way demographic structure has changed and the aging of the white population overall, at about 40 states, when the census results are done, are going to show absolute declines in their white child populations. These are people under 18 years of old. So it's a demographic phenomenon that's based on the older white population and lower fertility of the whites who are in their childbearing years. That's not going to bounce back.
Well, what are the opportunities inherent in this population shift?
If we're going to become a player in the global economy, first of all, we need to have two things. One, a labor force that's growing. This is different than Japan and some European countries where they have difficulty in getting, you know, bringing in immigrants or understanding why it's important to bring in immigrants. So that we have, and that's very important. But also, we have these connections to other countries by virtue of people having, you know, relationships, business relationships, family relationships. Just understanding how to communicate with people in different parts of the world is quite important, I think, for us. And what we need to do is make sure these folks have the educations they need to take advantage of what they bring naturally to the United States. You know, and I think that's where both the opportunity and the challenges arise.
Stay up to date with the latest research. Learn about Brookings events.
Okay. All right. We got a couple more clips to play. And like I said, there are three elements to this. We got the abortion laws, immigration, and also the wall. We haven't talked about the wall a whole lot. So this next clip is going to be talking about the wall. And the wall is not going to be built. And there are a lot of people that believe the wall is not going to be built. Kind of hard to build a wall through water and over mountains and all that kind of, it's not going to be built. But, you know, if Trump and his minions want to think they're going to build one, knock yourselves out.
You know, when I talk about the president creating the fiction of a brown menace, which I use that phrase to describe this idea, fake idea, of dangerous migrants coming to get us, is people don't like it. He doesn't like it. They both say that he doesn't see people that way. Really? Then why does his namesake put something like this on Instagram? You know why you can enjoy a day at the zoo? Because walls work. Now, he took it down, because that's what you do when you get caught doing something stupid. But it sounds like the making of a great debate. So let's bring in Anna Navarro and Steve Cortez. And Brother Cortez, we've had this discussion many times. I think the president would have been better served if he started where he ended last night. We need more resources to x-ray vehicles and detect drugs in vehicles. We need more resources, human resources. We need more judges. We need to think about accommodations. And we have to have physical barriers. They matter too. If he had done it in that order, and in that way, he would have been better off. But he didn't. He did it by demonizing the people that come into this country and saying that a wall would make it all better. His son is echoing that thought. He compares the situation to a zoo. And we all get it. You know, you don't have to be sophisticated to get it. That's what they're about, calling these people animals and wanting to treat them that way. Fair criticism?
No. That's not fair to say they. It's not fair. Donald Trump Jr. said that, not the president. That's just not fair, Chris.
Why?
Because it was Donald Trump Jr. The president didn't tweet that, didn't put that statement out. Donald Trump Jr. did. He shouldn't have. He should apologize for it. It's inappropriate. It's offensive. He has no role in the administration. He has no government position. He's not like his sister or his brother-in-law. He's certainly not his father, who was elected the president of the United States. But it's unfair for you to try to drag the president into that, and then you almost sneak in there a they, as if the two of them decided that these are animals at a zoo that we're trying to keep out. No, that's not the reality. President didn't say that. He's never said that.
2 points to you, Anna. First, Steve has never hesitated to throw my brother at me. whenever it suits him politically. By the way, you forget that it's
for
convenient for you.
Reasons.
No,
for,
no,
please,
no, 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 no.
Spare
me the BS. All right, I've had enough today. Anna, here's the point.
No, that's not BS.
That's,
no, no,
it's
for policy
BS.
Reasons, when he says that
this
ICE is a
policy
bunch of thugs,
reason, that's my
that
point.
Is his. That is his statement.
I hear you. It just doesn't make any sense. Anna, the president has said these people are rapists and animals. They're coming here. The worst are coming this way. They're a marauding horde. His son obviously believes it. They all believe it. That's the mentality that leads you to think you're a wall away from being protected by these people. Fair point or no?
Yes. I mean, I think he is echoing his father, who demonizes immigrants time and time and time and time again. And I think he does this a lot, right? Echo his father on many points. But frankly, look, first of all, zoos maybe have fences to protect the animals from people like Donald Trump Jr. who like to shoot them. But, you know, at the end of the day, Donald Trump Jr. and whatever he says, can I just file my nails? I mean, this
Good
is
problem.
An entitled, rich, spoiled little brat whose only call to fame is being his daddy's son, who hasn't built anything of his own, who hasn't done anything of his own, who is somehow trying to hang on to the fame of his father in order to have some level of relevancy. Steve is right. He didn't even make the cut that his brother-in-law and sister did to be part of the Oval Office and the White House staff. Daddy kept Fredo back home. So who cares what Donald Trump Jr. says? Who cares what Donald Trump Jr. says?
All right, you know what?
I don't want to talk about
You just said that the president demonizes immigrants, and this is another sort of sleight of hand that the left loves to try to put over on the American people. He has never demonized immigrants. He is against illegal aliens. He is against breaking and entering into our country. He's against a lawless border. He loves
he
legal immigration.
He has talked about
the
migration.
Steve, I have asked you in the past. Let me tell you this.
Come
no, wait,
on.
Let me say this.
Go ahead.
I have asked you in the past, and I will ask you again today, to stop referring to me as left. Let me remind you that I was a Republican when Donald Trump was a Democrat. I was a Republican when Donald Trump
was
an independent.
You're a very leftist
Republican. I was a
Republican
and supporting Republicans when Donald Trump had Hillary and Bill Clinton at his wedding and was giving Nancy Pelosi money. So the fact that people like you have enabled Donald Trump to take this party hostage and change and give up and compromise convictions and principles, Republican ones, that I grew up with, does not make me left. I fled left.
This
I
is the
fled
most conservative. This is
so
the
if
most
you want to talk about left,
president,
you know, you can do
Ronald
whatever
Reagan,
you want.
He,
the fact that I do not count
let's get back to the subject matter.
Does not make me left.
All right, I he hear might you be the on most that, conservative Anna, president since Calvin Coolidge.
But hold on.
So if you oppose the conservative policies on this president, you are de facto a left.
Demonizing,
yes,
he is
demonizing
not a
migrants is not a conservative value.
Not a conservative.
Do you think having sex with a
constitutional
judges?
Okay.
Do you think cheating on the stripper with a Playboy bunny is conservative values? Do you think trade wars
I don't
wars
think that has anything to do
values?
With policy.
Do you think pulling
really?
Out of Syria
yes, I do.
Is a
yes.
conservative
I think,
value?
I think,
give me a break.
I think constitutional. I think constitutional judges and tax cuts and sovereignty over our country and controlling our borders,
unpaid
those
for
are absolutely
tax cuts
conservative
that cripple
macros.
The deficit is a conservative policy value. Come on, Steve.
Yes, because of the growth. Yeah, yeah. Did you notice by the jobs report that we got last week?
Did you notice
that
the national
off the best
debt
manufacturing year?
Did you notice the national debt?
Yes. Chris, I will agree with you that the debt, when we cut taxes, often the debt first grows before economic growth becomes so large that it compensates for the it's paying pennies for pounds later.
Listen,
and
that
is what happens
down
often
economics.
With tax cuts.
That is the hope. That's not the history or the reality. But let's stick to what we're talking about right now. Let's talk about
the
shutdown politics. Fair point to both of you. I don't usually talk about his kids. I don't believe in that. Why? Because I grew up as one. That's why. And I understand that you're going to stick to your own, even if it doesn't make political sense, because he's your papa. I get it. So let's keep the son out of it. What I'm saying is this. He does demonize. When he was talking about the caravan, he did it. When he described them during the primary,
those
he called them
illegal
rapists. No, they're not. Migrants trying to come to this country, you haven't even decided whether or not they should get in or not. You haven't even heard their case yet, and you're deciding that they're illegal?
Chris,
you don't even know who they are.
Yes, you know that the vast majority of them have been abusing and gaming our asylum system, and that's
not
my opinion.
I do not know that.
That is what the statistics tell us.
The statistics
do not
tell us that.
Only, yes, Christy, they do. Only 10% of people from those three Central American countries
that's not abuse.
Are the preponderance of the
that
caravan.
That is our only system that only allows in asylum. 1 out of 10.
And,
that's our system. That doesn't mean that,
that
they don't have a bona fide claim. That means that we don't think they have one.
If they did... No, here's the other reason we know they don't have a bona fide claim, because they would do it in Mexico. They wouldn't cross an enormous country to reach our border, except for the fact that they're economic migrants. Let's just be honest about this. They're not asylum seekers, or they would take asylum in Mexico where it was offered to them. The fact that they traverse Mexico to come here tells us that they're economic migrants. They want to be Americans.
Right,
I
but here's, what,
way,
here's what you're ignoring
that.
About that.
I would
want
to be an American,
Anna,
too.
She's done with the nails and the Embry board, although that was a great prop. I want you to know that. I think that you probably brought it in by accident, but it worked very well for you, Anna. Kudos to you. The idea that if you're coming here out of economic desperation, it somehow doesn't count anymore, that it certainly shouldn't count as asylum, but it also somehow makes you illegitimate. How are you with that, Anna?
Okay, I think this is a country that has been built by people who came here as refugees, many for political reasons, many for economic reasons. You know, it's the people who do some of the hardest jobs in this country. And yesterday, that you know, address to Trump Nation that President Loco gave was full of inaccuracies and misleading statements. First thing he did was start off trying to pit brown and black versus each other, which he likes to do. And then he ended with an entire, you know, segment about criminal aliens and the cost. And when we all know that native-born have a higher criminal record and higher criminal ratings than immigrants do. But this is something that he goes again and again and again and again to. You know, I keep wondering just how long he's going to be able to play this same song and the same record. How long can he go back to the wall?
Okay.
I think he thinks it's a winning strategy for him.
Anna,
I don't think it is, but I think he's going to continue going back to it.
Final point, Steve
Cortez. What you just cited about criminality between native-born and immigrants, first of all, that's not true. There's a lot of conflicting studies. But even
no, there
if
isn't.
Were true,
only
okay.
when
no
you
conflicting
include
studies.
Yeah,
yes,
legal
are.
Entry as
no.
criminality, do you get the numbers where you want them?
No,
to
that's
be.
Not true.
Yes.
That's not true. John
yes.
Lott did an extensive study of Arizona. There are conflicting
yes.
studies. But listen,
no
even if I were to grant you that point, yes, there are.
No
but even if I, that's fake news
not
to
real
say there
thing.
Are not. It's fake
no,
news.
It's fake
but,
news
but
for you to
if
inject
were, if,
BS
okay.
and say that it's
look,
equal to the real data.
It's not
continue.
BS. But even if I were to even if I were to grant you that, okay, the point is the illegal alien crime rate should be zero. It should be, you can do your nails. You know who can't do their nails? Are people who have been killed, Anna, by dangerous, known illegal aliens who've been allowed to stay in this country because of the leftist policies that people like you promote in so-called sanctuary cities
I'm so tired
to allow
of
them to hide in plain sight.
Already. Just
and
because
then,
you want to compromise
well, I don't care if you're
your
tired
values.
Of it. Go back to,
listen, I don't
go
care.
Back to filing
I don't
your
care
nails.
What you call me. To me, you're
but guess
practically
what?
As irrelevant
Officer
as
Singh,
Donald
Well, you sure
Trump
seem
Jr.
to care.
Well,
Officer
no, I don't have to care.
Officer Singh in California can't file his nails, Anna Navarro. Maybe you can.
Ad hominem
he doesn't have that luxury
me.
Because
my, you know,
he's dead.
When
and
I,
he's dead
I was,
because
I was
an illegal alien who was twice arrested,
when you
who was a known crime member, was
talking
allowed
over each other
to stay in this country because of misbegotten leftist policies.
Let me just tell you something. Get down off the soapbox, because if you want to worry about who can file their nails, worry about who can pay the damn bills. The shutdown is on your head, my brother. This is what the president wanted. He has it now, and people are paying the price. And until he ends it, they won't be filing their nails or doing anything else that a paycheck provides. Anna Navarro, Steve Cortez,
we're getting very close.
All
right, got one more clip to play, and that's going to be the end of the show. But the thing that kills me about these people on the right, you know, this guy want to talk about crime rates. Seems like every time we have a major shooting going on in this country, it's usually a white Christian male. Not a black guy, not a brown guy, not a Muslim, not a Mexican, but it's a white Christian male, usually 9 times out of 10. But they won't talk about that. And they've got excuses up the yin-yang. They ought to just come out and say, we don't want any people from any brown people coming in this country at all, period, instead of lying about it. That's what they want to say, but they just won't say it. I mean, if that's what you want to do, just come out and say it and stop lying about it and stop making up excuses and all this other kind of crap. Like I said earlier, you know, when Trump comes up with this stupid immigration thing, you know, his grandfather, like I said, was a pimp and a drug dealer.
So they won't keep talking about crime. I think pimping is illegal, and I think drug dealing is illegal. But Trump's grandpappy did. He did both. So, you know, if you want to bring that up and everything else. And then also, who's going to, you know, if you don't let these people come in and, you know, do the work, who's going to do the work? When's the last time you seen a white guy out in the field picking lettuce? If you do see anybody white in the field, they're usually driving a tractor or telling other people how to do the job, but they're not out there actually doing the job. You know, and then, you know, in this clip, he had to bring up trickle-down economics. There's nothing great about trickle-down economics, but Republicans love it. And then it's also funny, too, and then I'll play this clip. It's also funny, too, that whenever there's a Republican in office, they all of a sudden, they forget all about the national debt. But if there was somebody else in the office, that's all they scream about. I have not heard one person say anything about this from the right. Say anything about this national debt that's going up. But when Obama was in office, that's all they talked about. Whenever somebody, you know, a Democrat is in, that's all they want to talk about. Oh, we got to do something about the debt. We don't want our grant, you know, and then when they get in, they can just blow it all up and they don't say a damn thing about it. Anyway, he played his last clip, and then that's going to be the end of the night show.
This is a Black Nouveau Web exclusive. This is the final part of our extended interview with diversity trainer and human rights activist Jane Elliott. Today, most urban sectors, especially Milwaukee, remains hyper-segregated. Why is it taking so long, or why doesn't it seem like we can move the button on diversity in neighborhoods?
Because the people who have the power in this country are the people who have the money. And the people who have the money are going to decide where people live. You need to realize that there are more children attending segregated schools in the United States today than there were previous to Brown versus Board of Education, and that's a fact. You need to realize that it is not the intent of white people to let this situation change in favor of anyone but themselves. And right now, white people are really frightened. If you don't understand the destruction of Planned Parenthood offices, and you don't understand the wall that we're going to build on the southern border of the United States, you haven't read the book, The Birth Dearth, by Ben Wattenberg. Ben Wattenberg was a brilliant Jewish man who was a member of the American Enterprise Institute. And he wrote a book, the first paragraph of which says, "The main problem confronting the United States today is there aren't enough white babies being born in this country." He was an advisor to presidents of the United States. He wrote the book in 1987. He says, if we don't change this and change it rapidly, white people will lose their numerical majority in this country, and this will no longer be a white man's land. Now, I'm not misrepresenting this. I'm telling you exactly, almost exactly what he says. He says there are three things we can do to solve this. Number one, we could pay women to have babies, as they have been doing in Western European nations for years. Then he says, and these are his words, not mine, unfortunately, we would have to pay women of all colors to have babies, so we don't want to do that. He says the second thing we could do is increase the number of legal immigrants that are allowed into this country every year. Then once again, he says, unfortunately, the vast majority of those wanting to come to this country today are people of color, so we don't want to do that. The third thing he says, and white men, women had better pay attention to this, 60% of the fetuses that are aborted every year are white. If we could keep that 60% alive, that would solve our birth dearth. Does that sound like racism to you? And if it doesn't, I want to know why it doesn't. If it doesn't, you don't understand what racism is. And I think it does. When we close Planned Parenthood clinics because we think they're there only for abortion, we need to take another look. They are used for many, many, many things, and many women need the things that they can get from Planned Parenthood clinics. But we are willing to do away with all that good to avoid allowing white women to have control of their own bodies. Now, nobody had better tell one of my daughters or granddaughters what they can do with their body. You haven't that right. Now, it would be interesting if we were as concerned about sperm cells, wouldn't it? I mean, we could take a whole lot of fun out of you boys' lives.
Right. A lot of people don't understand the trauma associated with race and racism. Can you talk a little bit about the trauma associated with
it? The trauma associated with it?
Yeah.
One of the main traumas is it tells white people that they are superior because of the lack of melanin in their skin. And then they find out suddenly that we've got a black president. That's traumatic. That's where their trauma is. Living a lie, finding out the truth, is traumatic. Finding out now, recently, that within 30 years, white people will be in the numerical minority in this country is going to be traumatic. And that's the reason we have to solve this problem, and we have to solve it now. I will ask folks tonight, how many of you black folks want to get even with all white people? And that's what white people are quite certain blacks are going to want to do, is get even with all white people. And nobody will raise their hand. And then I'll say, how many of you want to get even with one or two? Every hand will go up, and you know why, and so do I. White people are scared to death right now, particularly white males. They're scared to death that they are going to lose their power in the future. And they are. But if you want to get ready for the future, if you want to be treated well in the future, treat others well in the present. What we do in the present constructs the future. What we have done in the past, we can learn from that. And we'd better learn from that. Those who forget the mistakes of the past are doomed to repeat them. And when you read this book, you'll realize that that's exactly what we're doing. We're repeating the mistakes that we have made in the past because we aren't teaching about these mistakes in the present. We are not teaching history that is true. We aren't teaching social studies that is true. We aren't even teaching true geography, for God's sake. Have you seen the Mercator map recently? Have you seen that great big Greenland hanging down in the middle of that map like a ripe plum? And have you seen the legend at the bottom that says South America is actually 9 times larger than Greenland? Were you aware of that? Most of you watching this program are not aware of that.
You mentioned the wall several times. At first, we heard several things about the wall. First, Mexico was going to pay for the wall, and now,
yeah, but you need to know that 70% of what Mr. Number 44 and a half said during that campaign wasn't true. And the wall business wasn't true either. If his mouth is moving, his lips are moving, he's probably lying. You know that as well as I do. He doesn't intend to build a wall. We can't afford to build that wall. We have no business building that wall. We would be keeping Americans out of America. What's your question?
The question on the wall is, when you talk to people about the wall, certain people about the wall, there are certain people for it, certain people against it. The people who are for it, what's their mindset?
They're scared. They're afraid those people, those immigrants, are going to come over here and take their jobs. Let me tell you something. You can build a wall, 50 feet tall, and smart Hispanics, Latinos, smart Ecuadorians, smart others are going to tunnel under that wall and come up in their friend's house on the other side. You can build walls until hell freezes over. You will not keep that immigration from happening, and you better hope we don't keep that immigration from happening. We need those people. Do you know what will happen to the economy of this country if we take all the people who are brown-skinned immigrants out of this country, if we send them back? Do you know what will happen to our economy? Do you know what will happen to farming in California? Do you know what will happen to the price of your fruit? Do you know how hard it will be to get a good avocado? Do you have any idea what will happen to this country's economy if all those brown-skinned people go back to Mexico? I don't think we do. I don't think people have thought about that because they are being taught not to think. They are using a language. Right now, we are using a language that includes words like extremism and ugly language about people who are different from ourselves. People are listening to those words. They aren't listening to the philosophy behind them. They aren't listening to the core principles, which this person has none of.
Now, a couple more questions. When I hear people say that they're not racist and things like that, and we talk about building racial harmony in this country, I don't think I see it in my lifetime. Can you predict in the near future or far future when we will ever have racial harmony?
Oh, yeah. In 30 years, white people will have found out that they have no choice but to get along with those who are different from themselves. I'm not willing. I'd love to wait, but I can't. At my age, I'm not going to be here in 30 years. But we could change this situation if we chose to. During the Second World War, we called the Japanese, and you'll pardon me, but this is what we called them, slant-eyed little yellow. Mm-hmm. We didn't say that about the Germans. After the war, we rebuilt Germany and Japan, and we get along beautifully with the Japanese. That was in 1945 that we finally won that war. How many years ago was that? Figure that out quickly.
I'm not a math person, but
you're not a math person, but you know it wasn't that far.
Right.
And it didn't take 50 years for us to have peace with the Japanese and the Germans, even though we dropped two atomic bombs on Japan. The Japanese hadn't killed 10 million people. Nowhere near that. We didn't drop any bombs on Germany, any atomic bombs on Germany. They were a different kind of people. We couldn't afford to do that. We killed how many Japanese people with two atomic bombs? And they forgave us. You want to talk about forgiveness? You want to talk about changing this thing? I cannot understand how Japanese people can stand the sight of any of us, and yet they do. I cannot understand why black people who have been subjected to the ugliness that they've been subjected to in this country can get up every morning and go to work among us and not be absolutely furious. And I don't understand why we allow white people to behave the way they do. I don't understand that. And my third graders, after they'd gone through the exercise, couldn't understand it and wouldn't tolerate it. And when they went up to junior high and a junior high teacher used the N-word, one of my former students said, "If you're going to use that word, I'm going to go out in the hall until you stop using it, because we don't use that word in this school." That was a seventh grader who told his teacher off. When we have enough students who are willing to confront people who are making racist, sexist, ageist, homophobic statements, we're going to be better off. We have got to stop tolerating the intolerable. If it's intolerable for my black cousins, and every black person on this earth is one of my cousins, if it's intolerable for them, it's intolerable for me. I will not tolerate it. I will not tolerate it. That is not that. I am required not to tolerate that kind of treatment for the people who are related to me. And that's every person on the face of the earth. If your ignorance is such that you'll mistreat somebody because of your ignorance about the color of their skin, don't do it around me. Number one, I've been threatened with death lots of times. Now I say, go for it, fool. My husband died 4 years ago. Being with him would not be a bad thing for me. Death is not the worst thing that can happen to you. Living a worthless, useless life is much worse than dying.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the program. So tonight we talked about abortion, immigration, and an imaginary wall that will not get built. Talked about racism, talked about all kinds of stuff tonight. So to tie this up, just want to say, if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on, you need to start paying attention to what's going on. When these white people lose that majority status, all of that power, all of that money, all of that stuff that they've been so used to for the last 400 years is going out the window. And that is why they are doing their damnedest to try to put that in reverse. Because a lot of this stuff, right, that I'm talking about is about control, and a lot of it is about money. And they won't tell you that, but that's what the deal is. Control and money. And once they lose that control, the money goes next. And they know it. Because when they came over here and saw that there was already a lot of people over here, natives already over here, they just took whatever they wanted to take. That's why you have some of these big families with all this land. It's good. They didn't earn that land. They stole that land. And they stole everything that they can get their hands on. So they've been the majority for 400 years. So now they're getting ready to see that go out the window, and they ain't having it. So they're trying to hold on to it. So that's going to wrap up tonight's show. And I will be back next Tuesday. Haven't come up with a topic yet, but I've got a week to come up with something. So as soon as I come up with something, I will post it on the Facebook page. And also, don't forget, you can hear this program on TuneIn Radio app, iTunes, And what else? Something else we are on. Tune in app, iTunes, and I just went blank. But anyway, and we're also on the blogtalkradio.com website. So until next week, I will see you later. Remember, pay attention to the news. Peace out.